Church, good morning. I am David Thomas, as was shared, and it is my great pleasure to get to spend today with you all. I was thrilled to get an invitation to come and be a part of this morning, and that you all have also graciously invited us to spend the afternoon with you, that we could talk around this fascinating, transforming, sometimes overwhelming journey of parenting. And I'm looking so forward to that time this afternoon. I'm grateful this morning that I would have the privilege of being with you all, that we could spend some time talking about what the kids in our lives, whether it's kids you're parenting or grandparenting, whether you're an aunt, an uncle, a teacher, a coach, a next door neighbor, we all have kids in our lives in different capacities, and I think they have a lot to teach us. And I believe that was reflected in the video we just shared together. Those are some of the amazing, courageous, resilient kids that I have had the great privilege of knowing and spending time with over the years. And I want to bring the voices of some others to this time as well. In addition to the kids that I have the privilege of working with, and you all saw, the work that I do as a therapist is done in a different way. We work in a house rather than an office building. The most sought after therapists in our practice are actually dogs. We're all kind of secondary to the therapy dogs. In fact, I have a couple of really young children that I'm currently working with, and I'm not 100% convinced they remember my name is David, but they 100% remember my yellow Labrador retriever's name is Owen. So they just on occasion refer to me as Owen's dad, and I'm happy to answer to that. But that's a snapshot of how we do the work that we do in a very different way. So we work with kids individually, we do group counseling, family counseling. In addition to that, part of the work I do is what we call parent consultations, which is maybe a little like a well visit with a pediatrician, where parents come in, they're not at a place of crisis or even urgency, but just wanting to ask some questions like, does this sound normal to you? Do we sound like we're on track? And I love that work that I get to do with parents, and also the opportunities I've been given just to travel around the country and interact with parents and educators and just talk about a lot of things related to kids. And in addition to the kids I mentioned that I work with, I have three of my own. My firstborn is a girl, and about a year into her life, we got pregnant for the second time, and we were incredibly grateful. And we went midway through the pregnancy for our ultrasound, as you do. And on the way in, we said to the technician, okay, we want to let you know that we're old school. We know we've got all this modern technology, but we don't want to know what we're having. We didn't know my daughter was a girl until the day she was born. So make a note in the chart, but please don't tell us. And she agreed. And I can still remember where I was standing as she was scanning my wife's belly, and she looked up with this huge smile and said, I see two heads. And I remember thinking, why are you smiling if the baby has two heads? Nothing about that sounded right to me. You all, I was genuinely that shocked. We have no history of multiples in our family. My wife had not gained extra weight. Her counts weren't different. None of the indicators that are always there when you're carrying multiples were there for us. And if you have multiples yourself or know someone who does, you know they always come early. So here we are midway through finding out we're going to deliver early. We've got this tiny window. And I said to the technician, okay, well, we're clearly so behind. I'm going to lay down on the floor and then you go ahead and tell us what we're having. She said, two boys. We are still recovering from that news 17 years later. So I have a daughter and twin sons, and I'm incredibly grateful. And I very much believe they have a lot to teach me. I think all the kids we're surrounded by have a lot to teach us. And that's some of what I would love to unpack in some time with you today. So I want to ask you, if you have your Bible with you, if you would open that to Matthew chapter 18, verses 1 through 4. I want to revisit a passage that is familiar to you, but I want to look deeply into that today at what God might reveal afresh to us as we revisit the scripture. It says, at that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And I want to lean into that passage with you today. I want to focus in on three things that I think are of great importance for us to pay attention to, things that I think we could learn from the child in this story. And the first thing I would say is worth noting is that when Jesus called the child, we know from this account, from this narrative, that he came. There's no question in that. And grown-ups in the room, I want to say to you that capacity to be responsive is something that we lose. Around 11 or 12, we start to become more self-conscious. Whether you remember that time in your life or not, it's what happens. We become acutely aware of ourselves in a way we've not been aware. And we lose responsiveness. In fact, we start devoting a lot of our attention, whether we're aware of it or not, to how do I look? How are other people perceiving me? Am I coming across awkward? All these different ways of thinking about ourselves that rob us of responding to others. And there's no question in my mind that the little child he called in this passage was younger than that, because we know he came. And I don't know if we were present in that scene and Jesus called, if any of us could respond in quite the same way. And so my challenge to you, the beginning challenge to you, would be responsive. And pay attention to the things that I think rob us of our responsiveness. I think awareness, as I just said, is one. We become so aware and sometimes so focused on those things that it will rob us of responsiveness. I think fear is the other. And we're going to be talking this afternoon about the role that fear plays in all of our lives. In fact, many of you may have seen some of the newest data that keeps coming out that would say that anxiety is now a childhood epidemic in our culture. In fact, when we wrote our last book, Are My Kids on Track, and did the research for that book, the statistics at that time were that 1 in 8 children would be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. My colleague, Sissy Goff, who's at your other campus, just released a new book called Raising Worry-Free Girls. And she chose to do that because the stats, by the time she would write that book just a few years later, had jumped to 1 in 4. 1 in 4, from 1 in 8 to 1 in 4 in just a few years, and girls are twice as likely to experience it. It's an epidemic in our country. And it's not just an epidemic with children or with adolescents, it's an epidemic with adults as well. We're seeing the highest numbers we've ever seen. Fear is playing a significant role. And I want to challenge you as you maybe think about the role that fear and worry can play in your own life. And I want to share a story with you of where I learned from a young man I spent time with about the importance of that as a parent. Years ago, I met a young man. This kid was a junior in high school when he came to me. Great student, great athlete, just a great kid. And what had happened, what brought him to my office, is that first game of his junior year, he experienced an accident in his football season that would not only take him out of that game, it would end up taking him out of the entire season. He would have to have surgery, and he would have a doctor standing over him saying, son, I hate to have to tell you this, but your football career is over. It was a significant injury that redefined a lot for him. And this is a kid who was not just a great athlete, but very likely going on to play college ball at a school of his choice. And so he got the rug pulled out from underneath him. And you can imagine, any one of us can imagine how disorienting that would be. He had a very clear idea of how he saw his life going, and all of a sudden finds out, none of that is available to me. And so this young man experienced some sadness, intense sadness, that gave way to what was starting to look like some depression. That's what brought him to my office. And this brave, courageous kid fought through for a year just that intense sadness. And he graduated from high school, went away to a completely different school than he thought he'd ever be at. And his fall of his freshman year, I got a call from his mom, and she said, David, he's going to be home for Thanksgiving break and would love to come in and check in with you. And I said, I'd love to see him. And we set a time, and he came in, and we were spending time together, and it was great to see this kid. And he was facing, you all the normal things every one of us remember facing when we leave our parents' home for the first time and launch out into the world. And as we were talking about the things he was facing, somewhere in the conversation, we ended up talking about the moment when his parents were sitting in his college dorm room and everyone became aware that it was time for the grown-ups to leave, but no one wanted to say it. And some of you in this room who've sent a child to college may remember that exact moment. He said, "David, it was super awkward. It got really quiet. And then my dad looked up at my mom and he said, his schedule's filled out, his dorm room's set up. We've done everything we need to do. It's time to jump on the road. You all go ahead and say goodbye. I'm gonna pull the car around back and then we need to head home." So his dad went to get the car. He and his mom walked down. His dad pulled up behind his dorm and he got out of the car and he said, "David, my dad was crying harder than I had ever seen him cry in my entire life." He said he was crying so hard that he could barely speak. He said, he just kept looking at me and through tears, he kept saying, "I love you so much." That's all he could get out. And I said, "How was your mom in that time?" And he smiled. He said, "I remember she kept giving a lot of reminders. She kept saying things like, 'The money on your meal card is gonna run out and you are the only person in charge of replenishing that. Now remember that milk I put in your mini fridge is gonna spoil, check the expiration date.' All these great reminders, moms, that you give us." He hugged his parents. They got in the car to leave. Right before they were about to pull out, his mom rolled down the window and she looked at this boy she loves. And she said, "Don't drink, it is so dangerous." Those were her parting words to her college son. And you all, I mentioned I spent about a year with this kid. I spent a lot of time with his parents. They are wonderful people. They are intentional, thoughtful people. And I would say to you, if I were being honest about myself, when I'm at my best as a parent, I look a lot more like that dad. I'm parenting out of a place of love. And when I'm at my worst, I look a lot more like that mom did in that moment. I'm parenting out of fear. And I don't think our kids can ever get the best of who we are when we're parenting out of fear. I don't think any of our relationships are capable of getting the best of who we are when we're postured in fear. Fear doesn't allow us to be responsive like the child in this story. Fear can rob us of responsiveness. So I want to challenge you to attend to that. And I would invite you to come back this afternoon. We'll talk more about what that looks like in the lives of the kids we love. But for now, I want you to hold on to that because I think we're being challenged beautifully to be responsive. I would also say I think we're being challenged in this story, in that passage, in that part of the passage that says, unless you change. Unless you change, I think we're being reminded to be open. Kids do an amazing job of that. It fascinates me, the things they say. I have thought about writing a book about all the things I've heard kids say over the decades that I've been doing this work. They are just fascinating. They're so open. I love that with young children, you rarely have to wonder what they're really thinking. They're likely just going to speak that at some point along the way. And you'll think about how we lose that. Think about even how that's described in a lot of classic phrases. Things like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Or the common phrase, he's just stuck in his ways. We do get stuck. We get stuck and we forget to be open. We forget to the importance of growing and learning new things. Kids are so naturally curious. They love to learn and explore. And we lose a sense of that. I think change is such an important thing, but something we often will resist, something that, as we just discussed, can trigger a lot of fear for us and posture us in a place of fear. And I don't know about you all. In fact, I'd love to see a quick show of hands. How many of you have ever heard of a tool called the Enneagram? Raise your hands. Okay, lots of you. That's incredible. If you've not, you could write that down or maybe put it in your device. I'll spell it for you. It's kind of a big word. Enneagram, Enneagram. And it's a tool. It's a typology. Raise your hand if you've ever taken the Myers-Briggs. Have any of you taken the MBTI? Okay, a lot of you have. So a lot of workplaces use that tool. A lot of people took it when they went to college. But With the Myers-Briggs, you may remember, we all find out whether we're an extrovert or an introvert, if we're a feeler or a thinker. You get four letters with the Myers-Briggs. With the Enneagram, you get one number, and we are all a number between 1 and 9. And we use this tool a lot in our practice. We love this tool. I love this tool for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is I think it's one of the most amazing tools out there for spiritual formation, for growth. I think it is a fantastic tool that can move us deeper and deeper into relationship with Christ. So I love this tool for a lot of reasons. I think it's a game changer in relationships. And with each number, we find out what are the strengths and the struggles. The language they use is what happens in stress, what happens in security. And I won't ask any of you who raise your hands what your number is, but I'll simply say I'm a 1 on the Enneagram. And the 1 is maybe akin to the type A personality. So we like order, we're efficient, we're industrious. I'm the kind of guy you would love to have on your committee because I'm a hard worker. I love to check things off. The name given to the 1 oftentimes is the perfectionist or the reformer. We see all the things that are wrong in the world and we want to make it right, which I would say can be a bit of a challenge in marriage and parenting, I have learned over time. I have really great ideas. I just need people to listen to them. I can, if I'm not very careful, operate like I believe I'm the fourth member of the Trinity, or at least God's Southeast representative, and I am here on earth to inform people. And I think about all the ways my number has both helped me in life and hindered me. And I think when I think about it in the context of my family, I think that when I'm at my best as a 1, I bring a lot of strength and leadership to my family, a lot of vision. And when I'm at my worst, I can be like a bulldozer. I have a lot of memories. I have one very clear memory. My children were, I think, like 5 and 7 at the time. I remember getting out of the shower and walking into the kitchen. The house smelled like pancakes and syrup. My wife was over at the stove flipping pancakes. My kids had just gotten out of bed, and they had that great bedhead going on. They still had their pajamas on. And I walked in the kitchen, and I said, okay, everybody, listen up. We got a busy day. I'm going to take you 2 to soccer. Mom's going to take you to the birthday party. We're going to meet back at the house around 11. Your grandparents are coming, and then we're going to head to. And I was running down this long list of how the day was going to go down. And my sweet wife put the spatula down, and she walked toward me. She put her hand around the back of my neck. She got real close to me and lovingly said, sweetheart, you are the only person in this house who is interested in your agenda right now. It's one of the most loving things she has ever said to me. And I need people who love me that much to remind me to be open, to grow, to change. I want to change. I want to know those things about myself so well that I'm paying attention in a way that I'm open to growing. Because if I'm not, you all, what could happen, easily happen in my household, is that my children and my wife could start to feel like they are up for a performance evaluation at all times because of the way I'm wired. I would never want the people I love the most in this world to feel like that. But unless I'm open to change, to growing, to learning new ways, understanding these things about myself, that could happen easily. So I want to challenge you. What tools, what relationships are you in? What books are you reading? What context exists for you where you get to learn more about the unique way you're wired and how you see the world? And how you function in relationships, and the places that you need to grow. And I would, again, encourage you, take a look at this tool. It's an amazing resource. You could start with a great book called The Road Back to You. It's an amazing book written by Suzanne Stabile and Ian Morgan Cron. It'd be a great place to start. And then I want you to think about jumping off from there by asking some people, some trusted voices, some really good questions like, how would you describe me to someone who doesn't know me? What are my strengths? What are my struggles? If you're a parent in the room, you could say, what are my strengths as a mom? What are my strengths as a dad? What are my struggles? And I want you to think about finding folks who will tell you the truth, give you some honest feedback, so that you, like me, can learn some things we need to know. Unless you change, be open. The third part of the verse that I think is an important piece to take a look at that I love is, whoever humbles himself like this child. Whoever humbles himself. I don't think kids in this day and age get nearly enough opportunities to see what humility and civility look like on grown-ups. In fact, I can't think of a time in history when that's felt more needed and there's less opportunity. And I want you all to think about even what those things mean. I think so often we think about humility like self-deprecation, which is not what it is at all. I think humility is understanding my value in proximity to other people's values so that I can build them up. I think it's something very different than a lot of how we interpret it. I think civility is all about learning to disagree with respect, having the integrity to have honest conversation, to be open, to be curious, and respectful in our engagement. And I don't think kids get nearly enough opportunities to see what that looks like. I think you all, humility is a place of strength, not weakness. In fact, I want you to revisit an important passage with me that I think speaks to the humility of Jesus and his act in response to it. If you all will go back to Philippians 2, Philippians 2 verse 8 says, "And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord." He humbled himself. Do you see the strength of humility in that? I think also being humble, which I think kids do a pretty remarkable job with, positions us, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, to be more aware, but specifically being aware of our need. Being aware of our need, which is something I think we can lose sight of easily and we want to stay strongly connected to. And I think about a number of kids who've taught me a lot about that over the years, and my sons have a good buddy. We'll call this young man Jack. And Jack is now 17, like my boys are, and I've known Jack since he was 7. And in fact, I saw him just this week. He came up and gave me a big hug, and he is now 6'3". I mean, he's bigger than me. He calls me Mr. T. Never says Mr. Thomas. Mr. T, and he came up and gave me this bear hug that almost knocked me over. And I love this kid. He spent a lot of time in our house. My boys have spent time in his home. And Jack is one of those kids, like I mentioned earlier, who you never have to worry, what is he thinking? He always lets you know that. We're always clear on what he's thinking. Most of what he's thinking rolls right off his tongue. And a good buddy of mine told me a story years ago. He said Jack was having dinner at our house, and I think he was around 7.5, 8 at the time. And we were talking. My wife brought a beautiful meal to the table, and I looked up and said, "Hey, Jack, would you say the blessing for our time tonight?" And he said, "I'd love to." So they all reached out to hold hands and bowed heads. And there was silence for a longer period of time than the dad thought. And so he thought, you know, I need to let him know. He can start at any point. So he just said, "Jack, whenever you're ready." Bowed his head again, and there was more silence. And the dad said, "I remember thinking, is he still thinking? Is he preparing his heart? Should I jump in?" But I'll give him another second, more silence. And about that time, Jack looked up and he said, "I got nothing." I got nothing. And I think back on that, and I think how we lose that ability, how we lose that freedom to be in a place where we just acknowledge, "I've got nothing today." That may have even been your experience coming into this building today, that people ask, "How are you?" "I'm great. We're doing great." When you are not doing great, when you don't feel that freedom to say, "You know what, today, I got nothing." And you all, I think One of the most important things about being willing to say, to humble ourselves and to say, I got nothing, is that it is a declaration of how much we need Jesus. Think on that passage a little later in Matthew that says, come to me, all who are what? Full and doing great? No. All who are weary. All who've got nothing. Every Sunday, this would be happening right now at my church in Nashville. Every Sunday when the pastor gives the benediction, he asks us to stand and to open our palms and to be in this posture as a reminder that we need the truth he's about to speak over us. And what we have to offer is exactly this, nothing. My hands are empty and I need this truth. I need this bread, this manna. And I love the reminder that I'm given every time I am given an opportunity to do that, because it reminds me I've got nothing. And I remind parents of that often. My challenge to parents in this posture is, so often I think we assign ourselves the responsibility of believing that we have to be Jesus to our children, and I don't think we are capable of that ever. But what I think we can do is be people who need Jesus in front of our children. And I think kids remind us of that, and I want to challenge you with that today as I leave. So would you pray with me now? Father, thank you for the gift that I have been given to be in this space this morning with these dear folks, that we could reflect on your truth in this word, that we could reflect on the challenge you give us, Father, to be responsive, to be open, to be humble. Thank you for the kids in our lives and our world who remind us of the importance of that. Help us to lean in even farther as they are demonstrating that and living that in front of us. Remind us again that we just need to be people who need you, and we do need you. Thank you for this gifted team this morning who through worship has continued to remind us of that, Father. And may we now just continue to declare that truth, that need again and again. And I pray these things in your name. Amen.